Good morning. I greet you in Jesus' name this morning. I have really enjoyed our time here and want to thank you for the encouraging remarks that you have made. I can tell that you're listening and are taking in the things that are shared. So some years ago, I think it must have been maybe 6 years ago or so, there was a helicopter that was hovering around our house there in Virginia, and it was hovering low enough and circling around that it really got our attention. And my sons and I were outside the house working, and we kept watching this thing, and after a while, it went very low, and it actually went down below the trees across the yard from us. And it seemed like the helicopter landed. And then after a bit, it took off again and flew around, and it landed again. And so we decided we are going to go over and see what is going on. So we went across the road to our neighbor's place, and here there was a helicopter that had landed in their pasture, right close to the house. And what had happened is there was this helicopter pilot knew our neighbor. He used to live in the community, and he was on business in Richmond, Virginia, and he was going back home, and he decided he would stop in and say hello to his friend, our neighbor. Well, our neighbor was not there. He wasn't home. But the neighbors showed up and started chatting with the pilot, and he offered to give us a ride. So here we were, all of a sudden, in the middle of a day, a helicopter lands at the neighbor's yard, and we were offered a ride. So we said, sure, let's go. And about three or four of us at a time got in the helicopter, and he flew us around for about 10 minutes, and then he went and got the next set. Well, I was interested in seeing campus there where we lived, and so I said, can we just fly around campus? And so he said, sure. We went over and flew right over the home there, and we looked down, and I was so busy looking, I could hardly look fast enough. It was so interesting to see things from that perspective. And after that, I was thinking, I should get a drone, because that would be the same thing as a helicopter. I could take pictures, and I could fly around, and I got to thinking about that, and then a few weeks later, I bought one. It was on sale, and was Black Friday, if you know what that means, the day after Thanksgiving. I got the drone out and took it out of the box, and I read up on it, and I realized this is a very smart little device. It had all kinds of features on it. You didn't even have to be a very good pilot to fly it. If you got confused, all you had to do is just let go and it would just stop and hover there. It had sensors on it so that it wouldn't fly into trees and buildings and that kind of thing. It was smart enough to know that if you were out flying around and the battery got low on it, and you needed to get back home, it would come back automatically, and it would tell you what it's doing. But there was a special little button on there, as I recall, on the controls, that if you pushed it, it said RTH on it. And what that meant was return to home. And it was smart enough that it would know where it took off, and if you push that button, you could just let go of it, and it would go to a set altitude, it would fly over right above that spot, and it would drop down and it would just land within inches of where it took off. Now, we're kind of used to that stuff by now, but back then, it was incredible. I was so fascinated with how smart this thing was. In fact, it almost felt like this was almost like a little animal, like a little pet. It would be flying out of sight, and you would bring it back home again, and then you'd hear the thing buzzing, and it would come flying out, and it'd just come out of the sky and land right beside you. My little pet drone. It just amazed me at the capabilities that this thing had. Now, my friend also, a few weeks later, he decided he's going to buy a drone. And the one that he bought was a fairly inexpensive model. And he was out flying it one day, right close to where we live there. And he was flying it, and he was messing around with the controls. And it was up in the air, maybe 100 feet or so. And for some unknown reason, this drone started flying away from him. And nothing he did with his controls could make it come back. There's actually a term for that people that fly drones know about. It's called a fly away. Something goes wrong. There's a glitch. And that thing decides on its own, it's out of here. And he watched it going. And he mashed the return to home button. He tried everything he could. Nothing worked. It just flew away. It had a mind of its own. He got out in the vehicle, went down the road, stopped by the farm, and said, "Did you see my drone?" And the farmer said, "Yeah, I saw it. It was going that way until it was out of sight." He never saw it again. It probably flew until it was out of battery or crashed into a mountainside somewhere. We still don't know what happened to that drone. You know, we humans are just a little bit like that. We have thinking abilities, and if we think right, we obey what the pilot is trying to tell us. But we have that ability to just fly away. We can choose to do what we're not supposed to do. You know, yesterday I had a conversation with one of the young men here about artificial intelligence. That's kind of a big thing right now, AI. And some people are concerned about it, others aren't. But one of the concerns is that it will have capabilities that will be not good, take over the world, things like that. I'm not personally too concerned about that. But the term artificial intelligence is pretty interesting. And people are somewhat concerned about that. But I actually think that we should be a lot more concerned about real intelligence. The thinking abilities that God has given us and what we're going to do with that. That's actually something that we have more control over than AI, and potentially more damaging, I think, than AI. The real intelligence, the thinking abilities that God gave us. And so that's the gist of what I'm speaking about this morning, is for us to take a good look about how and what we are thinking. What we're thinking about and how we are thinking. It's really an important subject. Back in the creation, God made man. And the Bible tells us that he made Adam in his own image. God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air." And God made man in his image. And I know there's some debate about what that exactly means, but I think one of the main things it means is the capability to think and to reason. We are in God's image in that respect. The ability to think and to reason. Think things through deeply. That sets us apart from the rest of God's creation. Animals, yeah, they can think to a point, but they can't reason the way we can. It's more of an instinctive kind of thinking. We have the ability to think deeply about things. We can plan and scheme. We can think about what we are thinking about. That gets pretty deep, where we can analyze and think about what we're thinking about. This is extremely powerful, more powerful than I think we often realize. If we think of the scheming of wicked men in the past and the devastation that has caused, Hitler, for example, those actions started with thinking and thought processes. It's very powerful. But God, when he looked on Adam and the man and the woman that he had created and the thinking abilities that he gave us, he said, "It's very good." I think God was actually really, he waited until almost the last thing, and he looked at it and he said, "It's very good." I actually think that God was delighted with the ability that he had given us as human beings to think and reason. And there's reasons that I think that. If you look in the Bible, it says there that, okay, in Genesis chapter 2, verse 19 and 20, I want to read that. "Out of the ground the Lord God formed every beast of the field and every fowl of the air and brought them unto Adam to see what he would name them," what he would call them. See, he gave Adam, right after he had created him, a heavy thinking assignment. It almost seems like God came up with something to try out this thinking ability that he had given Adam. It says he brought the animals to Adam to see what he would name them. It was like, kind of like when I unpackaged the drone, I looked at the features it had and I read the manual to see what it could do. That return to home button, the sensors, and all that stuff. It was fascinating. And I think God, when he created Adam, he said, God could have named the animals himself, right? In a jiffy, he could have actually created them and they would have had names already. But he brought them to Adam to see what he would name them. It would have been so interesting to see that. The first man and all these animals, thousands of them. Now, if you don't think that was a heavy thinking assignment, we had 9 children, and naming 9 children with pre-existing names, that was a heavy assignment. Mostly my wife did it. I said yes or no, and you know how that works. But this was thousands of animals, and he had to look at them and say, "We're going to call this one an elephant." He had never heard the word elephant before, but he came up with something, a name for that animal. Thousands of them. And I think it's kind of interesting that some of the names kind of sound like the animal. Like in Kenya, we have the gnu, and they go, gnu, gnu, gnu. That's the sound they make. They're called a gnu. Now, I know that maybe Adam didn't, with language and all that happened at the Tower of Babel, maybe it was different, but he had to give each one a name, a heavy thinking assignment. And I'm sure that God was watching, and I think he was pleased with what he saw. But then, after that, things went a little bit off track. Man started thinking and using that ability in ways that were not good. If we go forward a couple thousand years, I think, in Genesis chapter 6, verses 5 and 7, there's something there that talks about man's thinking, and it was actually not very good. If I would ask you, why did God decide to destroy the earth with a flood? I think probably the first thing that comes to our mind is because man was wicked. And that's the right answer. It was because man was wicked, but it actually goes a little bit deeper than that if you read in the Bible what it says. Let me read that in Genesis chapter 6. Verse 5 and 7, it says, "And God saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." See, there you have it. It was the imagination and the thoughts of his heart. That's where it started. The wickedness was just working out of what they were thinking. It was evil continual, and it was not what God intended man to do. He gave him this wonderful ability to think and to reason and to use it in the right way, but they chose to use it in a bad way. So much that God decided to destroy the world except for Noah and the flood. So we get from that God has a distinct plan for us and the ability that we have to think. We can use it like the drone that works well, or we can be that flyaway drone that just takes its own way. We have choice, and that's a part of the package. God destroyed the world because of man's choices and thinking. Now, we can talk about that in the past, Adam's ability and the thoughts that they had back then, but let's now fast forward to today, July the 23rd, 2023. And for the rest of this time, let's talk about our responsibility today and how we should be thinking. What are we doing with this incredible ability that we have to think, to reason, and to choose? The free will that they had back in the flood, before the flood, that still exists. God didn't take that away. It would be a rather uninteresting existence, wouldn't it, if we would not have free will, if we would just be robots. But God has given us that free will to choose. And with it, we can have an amazing experience with God. We have been given instructions on how to think. And one of the verses that talks about is Philippians chapter 4. Verse 8, I look at this as a filter for our thoughts. It says there, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things. That this is a filter for us. We're supposed to, obviously, we have some control over what we think about. If we wouldn't have any control, what good would this verse do? But the admonition is to think on those things. And then in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5, it talks about imaginations and thoughts. It says, casting down imaginations and every high thing that it exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. We have a responsibility to bring our thoughts into captivity, to corral them in and to not just let them go wherever they want to. There are boundaries that God has put there for us. We're supposed to bring them into captivity. Now, there where we live in Virginia, it's hilly. Not very tall mountains, a couple thousand feet. And we live in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. And from our house, we can look up the mountain and we can see the ridge of the mountain. And there's a road that goes along the ridge called Skyline Drive. It's actually in a national park. And from our house, it's about 1.5 miles if you go by road. Now, one thing that I enjoy doing is I enjoy taking my bicycle up there. And I can drive up pretty close to that road until it's barricaded off. And then I have to take my bicycle off the vehicle and push it up to the top. And then from there, I can coast down the mountain. And it's an exhilarating experience. And one of the reasons it's so fun is because it takes no effort. You just coast. And there's one section of the road that you can coast by doing nothing but steering. I'm going 45 miles per hour. How many kilometers is that? About 60, probably. Am I right? Close to 60 kilometers an hour? Maybe 65, 70, I'm not sure. But a pretty good clip. But, you know, when you're coasting, you're going downhill. And you end up losing elevation. And you end up down at the bottom, in the valley, where the sun isn't really shining that much. And where, if you just coast, you end up at the bottom. And that's the way it is with our minds. If we just let our minds coast and we don't control them and actually put forth effort, we can easily go downhill. And we end up down at the bottom, where maybe where we shouldn't be. Some years ago, there, right close to our place, there was a young man who was doing some farm work, and he had a manure spreader attached to the back of one of our tractors, and the tractor didn't go very fast, so he decided on the one hill, he decided he's going to let it coast, and he had a load that he was pulling, and as he went around the curve, he kicked it out of gear, and he took off. down the hill. And the hill was a little bit steeper than he thought, and the load was a little heavier than he thought, but he was making good time. He was in a hurry. But when he got to the next curve, he realized that he is going a little plenty fast, and he tried to brake and slow down, but the momentum of the coast was going too fast, and the tractor started wobbling. And with the short wheelbase, it got worse and worse, and he lost complete control of the tractor. He went flying, the tractor flipped over, the manure spreader flipped over, and there was an awful wreck. Fortunately, he was thrown off and wasn't injured very badly, but the equipment was shot. We had to get a new tractor. Coasting is okay sometimes, but it can be very, very dangerous. And I'd like to suggest that when it comes to our thoughts and our minds, we don't risk coasting. We bring our thoughts into captivity, and we control what we are thinking about. A couple of years ago, my wife and I had a conversation with a young couple. They came to us, they said they'd like to talk. And it turned out that the lady, the wife there, she told us about some of the struggles that she was having with her thoughts. And she told us about how that years before that, things had happened and she had developed a negative thinking pattern. And this negativity grew and grew and grew until everything was wrong all the time. She told us how that when the sun is shining, she just feels like it's shining too brightly. When the house is quiet, she doesn't like it, and she's frustrated that the house is quiet. And when her children are there and are making noises that children do, that frustrated her. Everything, she said, was just negative. And she said when she saw other people having a good time, she was frustrated. And she was telling us this because she was desperate to get out of it. She came to us, and it was kind of a way of her to confess and to just try to get a handle on her thinking patterns. And she recognized that it was because she had allowed her thoughts to deteriorate to that point that she finally didn't have any control over it anymore. And I think she was set free from that through just confessing it and acknowledging that what she was doing was wrong. Letting our thoughts go and coast leads to all kinds of mental maladies that we actually could prevent. I think all of us face that possibility if we are not careful about our thoughts. One thing that I enjoy doing is with our staff there, at any time that I want to or have a chance, I can go out and just talk to the staff. It's great. There's always people around that you can chat with. And that's something I really enjoy. But one thing that I like to ask them is, how much time do you spend thinking about what you're thinking about? And they look at me like, what are you saying? Like, is this a trick question or what are you asking? And then I say, no, really. How much time do you spend thinking about what you're thinking about? So they think about it. And most of them say that they really don't spend a lot of time thinking about what they're thinking about. So we talk about it. I tell them, you have that ability to actually kind of remove yourself from yourself and think about it. you can choose what you think about. You can analyze and you can think deeply about things, and we talk about it. You know, the Bible talks about our heart as being the thought center. And I actually suspect that our heart thinks more than we realize. I personally think the heart is more than just a pump. I wouldn't be very dogmatic about that, but the Bible does talk about the heart quite a bit and associates it to our thoughts. I think our brain does most of the thinking, but I think of the heart as maybe more the seat of our emotions, where we have feelings and desires, things like fear and things like that. But I'd like to read some of those verses for you. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23, it says, "Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life." Regardless if it's talking about our physical heart or if it's an analogy, the idea is there. Guard your heart, your thoughts, with all diligence, carefully, for out of it are the issues of life. Proverbs 23, verse 7 says, "For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he." We become like our thoughts, what our thoughts are. In the New Testament, Hebrews chapter 4, verse 12, it says, "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart." There we have it again. I think it's important for us to understand that naturally we don't think right. That is not a natural thing for us to just think correctly on issues. In Isaiah chapter 55, verses 8 and 9, it says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." Our thoughts and God's thoughts, if we just think them naturally, they don't line up with God's. I think that we should every now and then just take a bit of time and think about what we are thinking about. Find a quiet place to sit down and think about the attitudes that we have. What kind of attitudes do I have, and do I need to course correct on them? Are my priorities what they should be? Is my thinking process pleasing to God? Today we have a lot of options for letting other people think for ourselves. I think that's one thing that's so detrimental about the digital world and social media and television and those things, is we can be very careful that we don't let other people do the thinking for us. I think other people can speak into our life, but we should not ever allow other people to do the thinking for us. Be careful about unknown sources that are influencing you. Something also to be conscious of is negative emotions. The Bible tells us in the book of Proverbs that he that has no rule over his own spirit is like a city that's broken down and without walls. Some of these castles around here have walls around them, and they were there for defense. The cities of old had walls, a very important thing to defend and to protect. And if we don't have a rule over our spirits, and I think of that as emotion, no rule over our emotions, we become somewhat defenseless. God has given us feelings and emotions, and they are actually there for our good. It's a wonderful thing. What would it be like if there would be no emotions? If there would be no joy, no fear, no peace, no... God is... That gives us a lot, a tremendous dimension there to enjoy life, and it makes life flavorful and wonderful. But most of the emotions that God gives, we have to control them. We don't let them just run wild. He that has no control over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls. I'd like to spend a little time thinking about the cause and effect of our thoughts. When we lived in Kenya, I had a good friend, and his name was Evans Siga. He's gone now. But I used to stop in at his house and visit. He lived in a small mud house. But Evans was a wise old man. And one day we were sitting there chatting, and a neighbor came by. This was a young man, and he happened to be drunk. So he came in, and he kind of interrupted our conversation, and he wasn't talking sense. So after a bit, Evans got up and tapped him on the back, and he took him outside, and he kind of helped him mosey on down the road, because there was he wasn't making any sense. And after Evans came back in, he sat down and he said, "You know," he said, "we are going to have a funeral for this man sometime soon." And I was a little surprised by what he said. And so he explained that this man, he said, it happens over and over and over again in the community. Young man starts making bad choices. He gets into drinking. First thing you know, he's in a fight. And he gets involved with all kinds of immorality. And likely, by now, he's HIV positive. He's going to die soon. I was thinking about that. And I was comparing this young, drunk man with some of the young men that were coming to our church and had chosen a different route. And there was a young man there at the time. His name was Tom, and he was probably about the age of this drunk that had come around, but he had made good choices, and with his good choices, he had gotten married. He had a young family. He worked hard. He had some cows, and he took good care of his cows. And he had created a nice life for himself and his wife and his family. And through the choices that Tom made, he had created a fairly comfortable and nice life for him and his wife. The other man was going to be buried in the not too distant future. It was through the thoughts and the choices that these young men made that actually made the difference. It's a very, very powerful thing, the ability to choose. This ability comes into play when we are offended. I was probably the time that I was most offended. Someone said something to me that it was just really offensive. And, I couldn't shake it. I took it personal, and I was actually pretty miserable. For a number of days, I could not shake what this man had said to me. And it was actually a pretty nasty comment. I'm not going to tell you what it was, but it was actually pretty nasty. And probably most of you have experienced that when someone said something that was pretty nasty to you. But I don't know if I'm more sensitive than the average person or not, but I was deeply offended. And I felt almost helpless in dealing with it. I took it to work with me. It was the first thing I thought about in the morning. All day long, I thought about this. And I got so sick and tired of this offense and the feeling that it was just a terrible feeling. So I told my wife about it. She knew about it. And so I decided that I have to forgive this man. And I was willing, but I wasn't sure if I am going to shake that awful feeling and the thought of what he had said to me. So we actually talked about it, and we knelt down, we prayed about it, and it was more than just forgiving. I felt like I could forgive him, but I wanted to forget about it. I wanted it off of my mind. And so that's what we prayed for. We prayed that we could forgive and forget. Like, I wanted it off of my mind. It was a supernatural experience for me. I was immediately freed from that. And it was a God thing. It was something that I wasn't able to do on my own, but God helped me to do that. I literally forgot about it, to the point where I went back to work, and it was, I was freed from it. So we can choose to forget about something with God's help. But I don't think God would have helped me if I wouldn't have wanted to forget about it. So we have to employ God's help when it comes to choosing to forget and forgive. But God will help us. The way the brain works scientifically is the way I understand it. I've read a little bit about it, but a thought is established and becomes stronger the more often you think about it. That's why a bitter person will many times have a very, very sharp memory of the offense that happened. It can be years and years ago, but they remember every detail, every minute detail. And the reason is because it's replayed over and over and over in our minds. And the pathway, the arcing that happens in there, the neurons that are firing, the way it's explained by scientists is, if you want to strengthen a memory, think about it often. And we know that's the way it works. You just think about it often, and the memory becomes cemented in there. But the brain is plastic, meaning it's malleable, and you can actually have some control over your thoughts. And if you choose to not think about something, with time, that groove that is worn in your brain, it can be taken away. And I think that with God's help, especially those pathways that are created by our thoughts, if they are negative thoughts, they can be removed and taken away. So in closing, I would just like to leave the encouragement to you to guard your thoughts carefully. Don't put your mind in neutral, but bring your thoughts into captivity and apply the filter of what is good and true and virtuous and right and pure there in Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. And ask yourself, does God approve of the way I'm thinking and how I am thinking? It affects so many areas of our life. Let's not be like that flyaway drone that just flew away and had a mind of its own. I've been greatly encouraged in just conversing with you and hearing about the challenges that some of you are facing. And it is a tremendous encouragement to me when I hear of significant challenges in other people's lives and the response, the godly response that you have. Just like to encourage us all to do that. Maintain those godly responses, and God will bless you for that.